All right. So where should we start this evening, gentlemen? It's been a while. It feels like it's been ages since Noah's been on the show. Welcome back, Noah.
Hey. That's because it has been ages since Noah's been on the show.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've been listening to every Ask Noah, though, so I feel like I'm still, like, hanging out with you in a way, but it's just in a way that's much easier to handle you.
Yeah.
What do you think about this Bitcoin, huh? Jeez, can you believe this? Tell me you're not, like, sitting there going, if Chris called and said, no, I've got to do Plan B, will you join me? Have you like, rolled that around in your head? Because you've got to be thinking that right now, because I am.
I guess, to be honest with you, I didn't really think that you would call me, and I just figured you would pick up the existing co-host, but...
Jeez, maybe. I mean, you love Bitcoin. You're the only person I know who's stupid enough to mine it right now.
I'd do Plan B in a heartbeat. There's nothing I wouldn't do to bring back Plan B, but we're down right now. We're at 6,000. We're at 7,000 last week.
Oh, yeah, I know. Anything above 1,000, though, is crazy to me.
Hey, Noah.
Yes, sir.
It's almost Christmas. Can I ask for Bitcoin for Christmas?
Yeah, right. Not right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Should have asked a few years ago.
It's a gift that keeps on giving. Oh, no. I'll give you. The nice thing about Satoshis are we can subdivide them. We still haven't even gotten to, I mean, we're still at fractions of a penny, right?
I would like to subdivide to two.
Yeah, right.
It is taking a bit of a dive right now, you're right, as we record this episode.
Well, it's because of this whole forking thing, I think, there's making a lot of people nervous. A lot of people don't understand it.
Yeah, but that's actually could be a good thing, because once you get everybody's fear priced in there, then it should, I think actually, so as we record this episode, it looks like SegWit 2X is on hold, and one of the key things about this fork of Bitcoin was not only the people behind it, actually, I should mention that, but also the fact that it was going to increase the blockchain, individual blockchain sizes to 2 megabytes. Which I don't remember what they are currently, but that's a pretty significant upgrade. And so some people are really on board, but other people thought this is going to be a super hard, like, abrupt fork. And the thing that's kind of interesting, Noah, about this one, I don't know if maybe you noticed this, but it seemed like a lot of the large mining pools or mining groups or organizations were behind the split, but, like, right. Individual miners, like the people, weren't really behind the split.
No, not at all. And the advocates don't seem to be behind the split either. I think part of it is that Bitcoin Cash is getting a lot of commercial attention. So, like, I'm seeing ads on TV. I'm hearing ads on the radio. There's places that are giving it away as, like, a promo thing. And I think there's a lot of people in the community that are like, where was this attention when the original Bitcoin thing came out that didn't require, you know, all this infrastructure and stuff like that?
Yeah, I look at this, and you know, there's a classic GIF right now of Mr. Bean on a roller coaster on the Bitcoin subreddit, and he's just completely unimpressed with the roller coaster. He's like, "Oh, this old thing, been here before."
Right.
A mutual friend of ours who's also a Bitcoin advocate, friend of the show, a fan, I should say, of Bitcoin, maybe not an advocate. He believes it's going to go below 1,000, and as a lot of long-term Bitcoiners call it, he says Bitcoin's going on sale. Before the end of the year, and he thinks it's going to go below 1,000. If it went below 1,000 again, would you be tempted to actually, quote-unquote, and I'm using this term as very bastardly, would you be tempted to, quote-unquote, invest in Bitcoin and buy some if it was below 1,000?
And I'll tell you why. Because to me, if it starts falling, if it fell below 1,000, yeah, I agree that it's probably on sale. And I've been saying for years that I think it's going to climb and climb and climb. It's going to get everyone's hope up, and then it's going to tank. And I don't know if I'd go as far as to say I think it's going to go below 1,000, but I definitely think it's going to tank. And then after it tanks, then I think we're going to start to see it climb and stabilize again. But
oh, you mean like the other 6 times that happened?
Yeah, but no, it's never really. So think, if you look at the history, we've always kind of stayed in like a $500 or $1,000 range. Like it hung at 300 for a long time, then it hung at 500 for a long time, then it hung at 1,000 for a long time, and then just in the last like 4 or 5 months, we've seen it shoot way up to 7,000, and we've definitely not seen. I don't think I've seen it go below 2,000, much less 1,000. So I guess I would disagree that it's that we've seen it happen many times before. In fact, I would disagree we've seen it happen even once since we've gotten above the $300.
This is a pretty, either way, this right now, what we are seeing is a pretty significant correction. So since in the last about 24 hours or so, maybe a little more, it's lost over $1,000 in value.
Right, yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's a pretty significant drop off right now.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. There's two ways to look at that. You know, as an actual investment, it's a terrible investment because from an investment standpoint, you want something that has a long track record that will do better than other investments. Yeah. And you can't say that about Bitcoin. But here's what you can say about Bitcoin. You can say it's a fun thing if you have some extra money to play like the Bitcoin lottery and buy, you know, put like, you know, $100 in it and then wait a week. And, you know, if there's anything that we can be relatively sure of, it's within the next year, it's probably going to fluctuate $100 both ways.
Yeah, here's
if you put $100 wherever you are, you're probably going to get above that at some point.
Well, here's the thing. So this is a real problem, and I think in part because of the all of the transactions, all the buying and selling on the Bitcoin network of Bitcoin right now. John Newbery, who he works in New York at Chain Code Labs on Bitcoin projects all day long. So this guy's a pretty regular blockchain developer and all that kind of stuff. He just tweeted a couple of hours ago that average Bitcoin transaction fees to just move your transaction along the network are $44.30 right now.
Really? Yeah, I suppose because the network's so congested, huh?
Yeah, that is not, I mean, $44. So for people who don't follow Bitcoin, there is a, this is how the miners in some cases, without, you can contribute to the Bitcoin network and never discover any solve a Bitcoin problem, but still make a little bit of revenue from these transaction fees. And these transaction fees are sort of how you make the minor part of the network work, really, in a future Bitcoin world. And so the fees kind of are based on priority. The more you pay, the more priority you get to get your transaction verified. And the faster your transaction is verified, the closer the faster the transaction closes. It's great. It's really kind of important for online sales, where sometimes there's like a 15-minute window when you're buying something online with Bitcoin. You have 15 minutes to make that transaction confirmed or the transaction's canceled. And the only way you really ever get it to work is you kind of grease the wheels and you pay a little extra for your fee. And the last time I bought something with Bitcoin, just to give you a little perspective, and I thought this was exuberant, it was $6.
There's also the you don't have to pay the fee, but if you don't pay the fee, you get put in a queue, and it's a very long queue right now.
Yes.
And this is basically the reason why they're trying to find a solution to this.
Right. This is why the forks are coming up.
Yep.
One of the reasons some of the forks are coming up. Yeah. Now, what were you going to say? No, sorry about that.
Well, I was just going to say that this is one of those things that we talk about where we say there is a market reality and then there's what we'd like to see, because the market reality is the solution to that problem. Everyone is going to go to one central figure. So, for example, one of the big things that Coinbase advertises is there is no transaction fee required to send funds to another Coinbase user. Of course, the reason for that is because they don't actually need to process it in the blockchain.
It's all SQL database calls.
Right. Right. But the reality is, if you get somebody that is really convenient and that is bank-like and ties in with, like, let's say they partner with eBay and become an accepted payment for eBay, the ship has sailed. It doesn't matter how technically superior it is to have your coins with an actual encrypted address, because all that goes out the window if you give the private key to Coinbase.
Yeah, that's true.
That is the market reality of what people are going to want for convenience.
So Chris Bernsky tweeted 4 hours ago. He writes at he wrote a book, actually, on cryptocurrencies. He also is a regular poster. He has an article he writes on Medium.com. And he's read some coin investing stuff. So I think he wrote the Innovative Investor's Guide to Bitcoin and Beyond was like the book he wrote. And he tweeted last night, and he tracks this thing, and he tweets hash rate charts from time to time. He tweeted there was a 50% drop in the Bitcoin hash rate last night. Overnight, there was a 50% drop before. And then, of course, now we see the price dropping like crazy. And that's one of the reasons why the transaction fees are so high. I'll put a link to this in the show notes.
Yeah, I think
something's going on big right now. Really big. Well, beyond our understanding.
Yeah, I think part of it, what it is that you have a lot of these people that do Bitcoin mining for a living. Those guys track the cost and the projections of Bitcoin, and then a lot of times it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. If a bunch of people say Bitcoin is about to drop in value, and they power off a large portion of their mining, and you know that perpetuates around, then all of a sudden, it in fact does drop down.
I don't know. I hear it's all them Chinese miners controlling everything.
I don't know about that.
Hello, User Error listener. Listen, we need to talk about something. You need some Linux on demand. You need some infrastructure in the cloud. You need something that you can get deployed in less than a minute. You're busy, and you want it to work fast. And you don't have time to learn some esoteric system. Go to digitalocean.com. Go there. Right now. Go now.
Use the promo code Here's the Thing.
Go there. Get over there. What are you doing? What, you're so busy? What? You can't go there? Get your phone out. Get your phone.
What if I don't have a phone?
Let's keep it in.
Damn it, Beard. You're making me laugh. Stop it. There's your lotion. They got a dashboard.
For days.
And listen, you can use our promo code here. Is the thing. You can get a $10 credit. And you know what's great about that? You can
get everything.
So much is good.
Great API.
Dashboard. Days and days. And they got like a lot of internet.
Spaces, Chris. Spaces.
Dude, I loved object storage. I love it. They also have block storage, which I use a lot of it. I got a lot of blocks. DigitalOcean.com, you go over there and you
got a great scalable infrastructure.
You got infrastructure for days. You go over there. You just
DigitalOcean for days.
Yeah, you create your account, and I want you to do something. You apply our promo code. Here's the thing. It's one word, and then you try out their object storage for 2 months for free. It's a limited time offer. Little insider tip. DigitalOcean.com. Use our promo code. Here's the thing. And thanks, DigitalOcean, for sponsoring User Error. DigitalOcean.com. Promo code. Here's the thing.
DigitalOcean is no joke.
This is one of those stories that you read about, and as you're reading the article, you realize it happened like damn near in your backyard, and it just brings a whole other dimension. So this is in Everett, Washington, which is about just 15, 20 minutes from the studio. And apparently, a gal named Marissa Wallen was working that night, and a violent incident happened after things went wrong. On the morning of October 24th, police officers were dispatched to the home of a victim in the Hawthorne Street. Now, this is all according to a local newspaper. The victim's employer had become concerned when the user didn't log in to their stay-at-home IT job that morning. Oh, man. At least somebody cared. At least somebody at work cared. And, wow, they're really watching. They're really watching if you don't log in there.
That revenue line, yo.
Officers entered the home and found the victim, age 36, slumped. Wow, this guy is a 36-year-old IT worker. See, and he's in Washington, 15 minutes from the studio, slumped against a wall, awake but unresponsive. The man was unable to speak but communicate using only hand signals. The man, whose name was not released, told police, through hand signals, that he knew his attacker but not her name. He was transported to a local hospital where doctors discovered he'd been shot twice in the head.
Jesus.
Yeah. Detectives immediately began investigation that included searching the victim's home. They discovered that where his wallet and his gun had gone missing and found two shell casings near the victim, which did not match his missing gun. They then learned that the female who had been to the home numerous times in the past was the last person to have seen the victim before he was found. A regular. During the investigation, detectives learned that almost $12,000 was taken from the victim's bank account, and all of the charges were tracked to a local business where the suspect was identified as being the same female who'd seen the victim before he was found. Detectives also reviewed surveillance video from the victim's home and doorbell. Oh, Jesus. Cloud-connected devices. And the suspect was seen entering the home around 8:45 p.m. on October 21st and then leaving in quite a hurry at 10 p.m., with her hands full of what appeared to be the victim's credit cards. These are high-resolution cameras, guys. I mean, like, damn.
That's probably the Amazon key.
Or the ring.
Yeah, exactly. They later located Wallen, age 21, in her home in Mount Vernon, which is where Jupes is parked. Is this getting weird or what? When she was interviewed, changed her story several times, and then confessed that she had shot the victim twice in the back of the head. Now, here's why. This is going through the court records. The gal was cool, emotionless, and showed that she was cold and calculating. In the end, she said she shot the victim two times in the head because he was performing oral sex wrong, and she didn't know how to tell him that.
What?
Yeah, so I think that definitely sends a message, that's for sure.
Yeah, don't mess up on that. There's books on this topic. You know, there's videos you can watch. Just get it right. Get it right.
Actually, you know, Chris, let me see if I can find this. Oh, how perfect would this be? I am pretty sure one of my beloved liberal feminist friends made sure to make all of her male friends aware that there is an online course.
Oh, really?
Yeah, man.
Well, there you go. There's probably other ways to learn, too. Perhaps learn by doing. And then it turns out that later, a second suspect emerged.
No, Chris, if you learn by doing, you might get shot in the head.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
Jenner Matthews has also been arrested in the case. Court documents show that Wallen made payments to him through Facebook using the victim's bank account. So she was paying off some guy with the victim's bank accounts. She went right to work. She went right to work to spending that guy's money. That is really something. The escort shot the client in the head. And they say it was a client, too, not like a girlfriend-boyfriend relationship. But she was a working girl. Yeah. Yeah. You know, speaking of cloud-connected stuff, this story got a lot of people upset this week and kind of got me worked up. Now, they make good. We'll get to that. But it started with this story. Logitech is going to brick Harmony Link hubs for all owners in March. Logitech has announced it's shutting down all services for Harmony Link hub users. That little plastic puck released in 2001 that gives smartphones and tablets the ability to act as universal remotes for thousands of devices.
Isn't that not the thing that you just got recently?
Yeah, well, my dad gave it to me for my birthday in January. Yeah. So I've had it for half a year. And I use it to have the Echo turn on the TV and the soundbar.
Chris, just to clarify, January was almost a year ago now.
Oh, my God! Damn, that sucks, Rikai. Yeah, so I got one of these things. I got it in Lady Jupe's. It's kind of nice. So it hooks up over USB power. And it's a couple of things. Puck is the wrong descriptor, I feel like. It's more like a pebble. It's like a flat, round, polished pebble.
Mm.
And it's got like 1,000 IR projectors under its hood. And so it can blast IR in all directions of it, which works surprisingly well for controlling a lot of devices. Plus, it can be a Bluetooth to IR bridge, which is really nice. And it can communicate specifically with the NVIDIA Shield TV. It's got like a profile for that. And then it has a little remote IR blaster, like a little one that it connects back via a really long cable. And I've placed that in a location where it can power on my soundbar and my TV. So you come in and you say, Echo, turn on the TV. And then you say, Echo, ask Plex to play the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery. And all of that happens while the TV and the soundbar are turning on. And I'm doing something or I'm cooking or whatever.
Now, when you say Bluetooth to IR bridge, does that mean that you can use a Bluetooth device with it, or it can connect two Bluetooth devices?
Both, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really nice.
So you can use your phone, technically.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. That is one of the things we do. And that's probably how the Echo is talking over Wi-Fi. So it also does Wi-Fi.
Of course, none of it matters now because it's bricked.
Yeah, well, so here's the thing. In March, so this thing came out in 2011. Keep that in mind. It was, ranged from $100 to $300, depending on when you got it, I think. And it is one of the worst setups ever. It is the worst.
Well, it's old cloud connected, Chris.
It is, and every time you go to a screen, it's got one of these pre-done video recordings that now click on this, and it's like this. But every time you go to the screen, it starts it and it has to pull it down from their cloud server every time. So when you're on a slow cellular connection,
well, I understand why they wanted to brick it now.
Well, I guess it turns out they had some sort of security certificate, and that's all they say. I don't really know what that means. That will expire. There is a technology certificate license. It will expire next March. The certificate will not be renewed as we are focusing resources on current app-based remotes, the Harmony Hub. And so because this agreement essentially expires next March, they are going to discontinue the product. Now, they have made good since this story and said that they will offer folks, I think, even a free upgrade to the newer product.
But that's not good of them.
Yeah, it is good,
but
right?
Isn't the newer product a software product?
No, there is a hardware component, I believe. Oh, okay. I'm not as familiar with it because I haven't needed to look into it. But there is really something that gets me about... here's the problem, is companies like Logitech are thinking about this the wrong way. They're thinking about this like a hardware company that sells devices. And now they need to think about this as a services company that's selling devices to use their services.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. 100%.
I tell you, no, it's like I understand that there's a security aspect to it, and I'm usually one of the first people to argue that aspect. But at the same time, in my opinion of it is I use it in a way that it's on the LAN. It doesn't communicate with the cloud services other than Amazon's API. And right. It works perfectly fine. My DVD player and my Blu-ray player are also about, you know, from 2011, and they're not getting bricked either. And it's just this is what bothers me about it. And I know you always make this point, but I feel like this week it has been a particularly bad week for me. Like, I'm on a limited connection, so I set these things up, and I just expect them to work, and then I go to use them, and they're like, mandatory update. This happens to me all the time with the Chromecast. A mandatory update, and even a 60-meg update is a 5-minute download for me. Mm-hmm. Or I go to show Dylan Rust this weekend, and I go to launch Rust, mandatory update. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's play Rocket League. Sorry, there's a 2-gig update. 2 gigs? Okay, well, I have to wait till tomorrow now before we can do this.
That's a tenth of our monthly budget. Yeah, no, and one of the things that is kind of frustrating to me is I understand it when there is no other thing or no other way to accomplish the same task. One of the reasons I don't really rail on Plex very much, at least not, you know, openly, is because there aren't a lot of ways to do what Plex does without tying it to some sort of cloud service. Like, there is, but it's insanely complicated. It would involve a number of different firewall rules and stuff like that. And you'd have to have a static IP and all that if you're not going to have a central broker. But when it comes to things like the Logitech Harmony, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, the Logitech Harmony does that Universal Remote Control's URC Hub doesn't do. And the URC Hub doesn't require any cloud connection, any internet connection whatsoever. It literally can just exist on its own.
Right.
So,
but the problem is, in this new fancy LadyTube reality, you do have to have the cloud connection because LadyTube uses a cloud API to execute your commands on the Harmony.
Okay, yeah, I guess if you want to tie it to other cloud services, then yeah, you would
need.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah, but as far as what I can actually get done, though, like, I want to speak to the remote and have it tell it to do stuff.
How much do you think that setup would be, though? Like, so just like, you know, Lady Jubes. So say I wanted to control the TV, a Blu-ray player, maybe a console, and switch to our antenna source and switch to the NVIDIA Shield and turn on the TV, turn on the soundbar, and maybe set the right inputs on the TV. I mean, how much would a remote that I could talk to, and not that I'm going to do this, I'm just curious as a comparison, what's the cost, like, initial all-in investment there?
Yeah, so there is a cost, and it is substantial. So the remote that I have right now, and granted, I have one that allows me to do different profiles, so I can have, you know, a kitchen profile, bedroom profile, so that way I can have one remote that I can use any remote in the house on any TV. So there's a cost involved, but that one is about $850, and then I think the little controlling hub thing is about $450. So this cost is substantial, but here's one thing to consider. I will likely not upgrade it for 20 years or 25 years. Like, I bought it 5 years ago or 6 years ago at this point, and I've still continued to, even these newer stuff that comes out, there are, you know, software updates that come, you know, but I can choose to install them or not. And one thing that I think is really, really beneficial for us nerds is the software that it comes with, which does only run on Windows, but it runs fine in Wine. The nice thing is they have what they call profile builders. So you can say, what I want for this remote. I want a Blu-ray player, a TV, and you just drag them in and pick the model number, and it already has all of the mappings and stuff like that. And then once you have them all drug into the profile builder, then you can say, I want this one to come on and this one to be this source and this one to be this. And then all you do is press a single button and all of that stuff happens, or, you know, use the voice to.
That's nice.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. The cost is tremendous comparatively speaking.
So here's my question. So when they say that they bricked it, that means it doesn't work. It doesn't do anything at all.
You're correct. Yes. Yeah.
So why did it need to be bricked completely? Why couldn't it be put into like a reduced functionality local device
thinking.
Mode?
That's what I was wondering. I mean, so it's sort of a moot point because they've made good the hub. So I'm looking at the Harmony Hub right now, and it is essentially a drop-in replacement for the Link. So yeah, I mean, and they're making good by giving this away for free. But that was what my thought was. Here's what you have to do. I think what Logitech should have done is they should have gone, shit, you know, we kind of bought this company, we started selling this product, and when we did it, we were a devices company. You know, we made mice and keyboards back in 2011, 2012. That was the main thing we sold. We didn't think of ourselves as a cloud services company. And so what we're going to do is we're going to issue one more final software update to this thing. It's going to make it a local device, and it'll still do all your IR and Bluetooth, and it'll talk over LAN to Wi-Fi via Wi-Fi, And that's it. And we're going to disable the cloud functionality of this thing. We apologize. Here's a 35% coupon off of the Harmony Hub, which is a device we've built in the era where we realize we're going to be an ongoing services maintainer. Mm-hmm. And by the way, all Logitech products come with a guaranteed 7-year cloud services. And that's how it should be. From now on, if you want to sell me a $100 plus product that requires cloud to work, to fundamentally function, if I have to connect to your server in another data center for my little device to work in my house, then you have to guarantee me 7 years of service.
That seems fair.
Or charge or give the device away and charge a monthly fee for the service.
That's what I was just
going to say. Yeah. I mean, that's got to be how it's like they got to have like a come to cloud moment here. And realize that they're now getting into the services business. And you know what? Step up to the plate. Because as a sysadmin of the past, I understand what a monumental task it is to actually have genuinely really good uptime and availability all around the world. It is a massive fundamental task. It's why dumb shit companies like CBS think that they can just launch a streaming service over the summer and all of a sudden compete with Netflix. They have no idea what they're getting into. Right? They have no idea because they haven't done it before. It's like just like me 10 years ago, I had no idea what would be involved in podcasting. There's an ignorance to it.
It's funny you bring that up because I was at a friend's house and it wasn't CBS, but it was one of the cable companies that has a streaming app thing. And a gentleman is a friend of mine. He's a little bit older and he doesn't have Netflix or Hulu or YouTube. He doesn't do any of that stuff. And I was telling him, I said, you know, have you ever considered getting like a Netflix, you know, subscription? And he goes, yeah, you know, my iPad broke a while back though, and I don't have any way to watch it. And I said, huh? And he goes, but I have this new streaming thing and his, whatever he has, the little box that they give you. And so we're setting the streaming thing up on my phone, and he opens the box up and gets the little activation code or whatever, and we activate it. And as soon as I launch one of the channels, it starts playing this ad, like it starts playing this commercial. And it just kind of hit me right then and there. It's like, don't you guys know this is not what people expect from streaming services? Like when I open Netflix or YouTube, even the YouTube app on my NVIDIA Shield, like it, I don't know if yours does this, Chris, but mine completely ignores all the ads. If I stream something to the NVIDIA Shield, it never plays the ads. It just starts with the video.
Yeah, totally.
That's not what we expect.
What? You're gonna disagree? Because I tell you what, I'm not paying. That's like why I don't get Hulu.
I was just gonna say you are not very streaming aware because this does happen on streaming services.
Yeah, Hulu's.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
See, Hulu has two tiers. They have a tier where you pay them and they still give you ads, and a tier where you pay them more and they don't give you ads.
I'm on the YouTube tier where I don't pay anything and I don't get ads.
Yeah, I subscribe to YouTube Red and I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I'm on Netflix and Amazon Video.
Yeah, they.
I have Amazon, yeah.
With YouTube Red now, you can share it with 5 family members. So Dylan has YouTube, but he has like this kid's version of YouTube. And so now if he ever goes on the main YouTube, because like search results send him there and stuff like that, I've got YouTube Red on there to prevent ads. Because those ads, man, they work on kids in a really sadistical, twisted, psychologically penetrating way. Like they really work on kids. Like, there was a before I got YouTube Red, he would just randomly say, oh, yeah, McDonald's has the new what such and such. Just go to McDonald's. I'm like, what? How do you even know what toys they have in their Happy Meals? Oh, I saw it on YouTube. I'm like, fucking YouTube.
There's a whole controversy about those kids' toy videos now, too.
Yeah, the Elsa videos. I've watched a couple of them. They are gross.
Yeah.
ElsaGate. You look it up. It is a disgusting, high profitable racket, and YouTube has been weirdly slow to respond to it. So the short version for those of you who haven't been perverts stroking your dick watching Elsa and Spider-Man. So there's these videos that are made they're positioned as if they're kid videos, but it's Spider-Man and Elsa from Frozen, one of the characters from Frozen, doing sort of sexually explicit things with their clothes on. Have you seen it, Noah?
Well, yeah, oh yeah, my kids are they're skits, right? Like they're supposedly that they're just Spider-Man is attacking Elsa or Elsa is attacking Spider-Man, but then it always has these weird twists to it, if you will.
Yeah, yeah,
like way more obvious. Like some people, when you say that, people are going to think like Disney. It's way more overt than like Disney.
It's like adults in some Halloween costumes,
right?
Yeah, it's not like adult jokes that kids won't get in a kid's thing. It's much more direct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so far my kids haven't picked up, like, and here's the thing. There are some that the related videos lead you to some weird, weird stuff on YouTube.
And they're, and we're talking their videos. So I'm looking at the, I'm looking at some of the channels right now. So their videos are minimum, like a low video would be, you know, 100,000 views, but we're talking 13, 12 million, 12 million, 12 million views. Just these top, the four videos right here on the top of the channel, 4 million views, 12 million views, 7,600 views. So it ranges depending on the skit. Some go more viral than others, 6.7 million views, 8.9 million views. So they're getting a ton of views. They're monetized too, which is the other thing that, as somebody who's constantly battling that, of course that bugs me. And YouTube, they're a meme. This is a meme online. KnowYourMeme.com has a post on it. Like, this is something that...
There's a H3H3 video on it that's actually really informative and funny.
Yes. In fact, I should go find that, and I will link that in the show notes, because that really explains everything way better than we could. And and they're a huge channel. Yeah. So it's something that obviously Google employees are very aware of, mm-hmm. and yet it's still happening. And I'd say it's borderline, it's not child porn, but it feels close to that category.
They have responded on some level and saying that they're going to try to restrict things more via age gating.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. They say that, and then it seems like it didn't work. Yeah, so H3's video just on it has 4 million views.
Yeah.
All right, I'm dropping that in the show nizzles. You guys have got to see this thing if you haven't. Just don't go watch the particular videos. Just go watch H3's coverage on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the internet is going to be – that kind of stuff is on YouTube is going to be totally – I don't know. It's going to be one of those things where it's an arms race in a way. Like, it's always going to happen. Always. Last.ting.com. You go to last.ting.com to support the show and get $25 off of Ting's service or $25 off a device if you don't have one. Ting's a smarter way to do mobile. The average bill is just $23 per phone, and it's simple. It's $6 for your line, plus whatever Uncle Sam's cut is in your area. It's $6 for the line, and then just your minutes and your messages and your megabytes, just what you use. And that's it. That's it. It's pay for what you use wireless, nationwide coverage, with no contracts and no early termination fees. Last.ting.com. Oh, and here's something else. You know, with the holidays coming in, consider this, my friends. You can buy the Ting SIM from Amazon with Prime shipping. That's actually a pretty good stocking stuffer or extra holiday. Fits in a card. It's the perfect little gift to say, hello, fellow geek family member or friend. Would you like some connectivity for the holidays? Check out Ting. Then just go over to last.ting.com. You give them that SIM card. They go to last.ting.com. They get their first month more than paid for if they're anywhere near the average. Mine was month and change, my first month of Ting. That's really what sets it for you, too. You're like, once you see that, you're like, what was I doing anything else? Last.ting.com.
Let's get an update from Mr. Beard. I know you're doing all sorts of crazy things, moving out and setting up life, and all sorts of crazy things are happening. Beard, what's new with your housing situation?
He's leaving the nest, Noah.
This is really weird. You guys are like trying to be my parents, and
we watched you grow up here in the studio.
We're gonna be empty nesters.
Yeah, yeah.
The place I was looking for went off the market.
Oh, man. I knew it was going to go fast.
And then it came back on the market.
Oh, really?
And then it went off the market again.
He found a pretty decent, like, 800-plus square foot apartment downtown Seattle.
Through this entire... Well, yeah.
Which you knew was going to go quick, because it's, you know, that kind of...
It was really weird that it came back on the market, though. But through the entire process, I called them every day, basically. Never got a call back.
Oh. Maybe they're...
So now I'm looking at like another dozen places that aren't as good, but still might be good. And that's pretty much the update.
Oh, that's pretty riveting.
If you've already explained this on the show, then you can just say, Noah, go back and listen to the episode. But is there a particular reason why you want to live in like downtown Seattle? Because from everyone that I know that lives in Seattle, like they all tell me that that's the last place you want to live. You just want to go visit there, but you want to live outside of Seattle.
Well, that's why our traffic's so bad.
the girlfriend has a job in downtown Seattle, and B, inside actual Seattle itself is the only place you're really guaranteed to be able to get very high speed internet, which is useful for somebody that does remote video editing.
Well, describe a very high speed internet, because
most places.
Well, yes, but the problem is, Chris, unless you get a Comcast business account, you have a 1 terabyte cap.
For
anything under a gigabit.
Yeah,
and that's not true in Seattle.
Well, there's different ISPs in different space. I mean, so Comcast isn't our only ISP. There's several different ISPs, but different ISPs have like guaranteed territory or whatever, like a monopoly on a certain area,
which is basically Comcast everywhere outside of Seattle.
Here's my question. My question is, you can't tell me that like Microsoft in Redmond doesn't have probably one of the best internet connections in the entire country, much less the state of Washington.
They probably have fiber that's laid directly for them. Because they can afford to pay for it.
Huh. Are you making an argument for Seattle, or are you making an argument for city life?
I'm making an argument that there's got to be. I mean, I understand the job thing, so that might be immovable. But I feel like the internet thing is like there's got to be great internet outside the city of Seattle in the entire state of Washington.
There is, but there's no cheap housing plus great internet outside of Seattle.
But isn't Seattle housing expensive?
What about a different city?
Oh, I've looked at different cities. The problem is all the prices are high at this point.
Yeah.
Like Seattle and all of the surrounding areas.
Yeah, I mean outside of Washington. Yeah, I would, like, if I were going to buy a house today and I didn't have kids, I definitely wouldn't buy in Washington myself.
The problem
I know
is,
you're
Chris,
renting now.
The problem is, Chris, you convinced me that Washington's a great place.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I don't know. It's too expensive. It really is. Like, so I'm looking at – so look at this place. This is 5,000 square feet, hardwood, 3 baths, 5 bedrooms, gas heating, you know, all the amenities.
Oh, yeah. Actually, buying a house in Seattle is actually not too bad. You can get a lower mortgage price than you can pay rent.
Yeah, it is not a great market for people who are. It is a good market for people who are selling and have property right now in Seattle. That's for sure, but not people that want it.
If you know somebody that can loan me another $90,000, I'll go and put down a mortgage right now.
So why not hang out with the North Dakotas in Grand Forks? I mean, just I'm not saying you actually should, but just like as a thought experiment, because the cost would be totally different. Like it would be, you could get a mansion compared to what you get here.
So actually, funny story. So if you go on eBay and search for house for sale in North Dakota, there are houses
eBay,
dude. There are houses for sale in rural North Dakota for like $2,000 or $3,000.
I don't trust eBay houses.
Yeah.
House for sale, North Dakota. I'm doing this right now. That's funny.
See, the trick here is probably that they're selling you a portable house and not land.
No. It has land. In fact, actually, here's another thing. So this is not North Dakota, but it's the same thing. So this is on 0.17 lot acre, and there is a house on it. I'm not saying it's going to be a nice house, but the bid is at $2,550, and there is 1 day and 6 hours left. And this is in this is in Port St. Lucie, Florida. But I also saw one in Arkansas too. That was like $2,000, $3,000.
So apparently, I guess I didn't know this. Buying houses on eBay is a thing. Why don't you do that, Beard? Go buy a house in North Dakota on eBay for like $15.
For $15? I mean, for $15, I might buy like 20. But the thing is, I think city life just suits me, especially as somebody that doesn't drive.
Yeah, and I say self-driving is not going to happen in our lifetime. So I'm a self-driving denier. I think you're probably right about that. If you're not going to have an automated car and you want to be able to walk to stuff, then yeah.
Yeah, so in like 20 years, I might be able to move out of the city. But Seattle may be expensive, but spoiler, all cities are expensive. And at least all cities that I would want to live in. And on top of that, Seattle is actually like the weather here never gets really
now
too
you're
bad.
The now you're the Washington fan. I see.
I am.
You started this show. I'm the Washington fan, and now we're on this end of the show, and we're for 35 episodes in. We've swapped roles.
Well, you're wanting to like go out into the deserts of Arizona and live nowhere, and I'm wanting to live in Washington.
Arizona has cheap housing as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking a compound in North Dakota. You know, there's that lake that Noah's always talking about. We just get a super solar setup. We winterize Lady Jupes. We build like a canopy around her, and build like a skirt for the bottoms, and I mean, we could just make a compound out on this lake.
I understand.
You could build an igloo around it.
I understand that North Dakota has great barbecue, apparently.
Oh, what? Where is this? No, they got walleye. They got that.
No. You don't get to do that. I was not going to fly past that. No, North Dakota does not have anything close to authentic, less real barbecue because we can't get the ground warm enough to bury the pig. So.
You got to get one of them above ground pits. That's what you guys got.
Or you got to get a basement that doesn't have like, like a dirt basement. You just do it in the basement.
You know, out here on the west, Noah, we got these newfangled furnaces, and you can put a whole pig in that son of a bitch, and it's above ground even. You guys will get one of these days.
Does it still have the same thermal capacity that burying an animal in the ground has?
I don't know, but what you got to ask yourself is, what's the thermal capacity of a big green egg buried in the ground?
Yeah, okay. Well, hold on a second. You know, the big green egg, I know some very authentic, legit barbecuers that use the big green egg. So that I'll give a pass to that. But
now,
I am skeptical.
In the ground.
I am skeptical. Well, I don't even think you need to bury it. I think it actually it's terrible.
Think about it.
You think
increase
you need
the thermal capacity.
Think about it.
I don't know. I mean, the only reason I'd bury a big green egg is because it's too expensive and I'd be afraid somebody would steal it.
Oh, yeah, see that. I'd bury a big green egg in hopes that it would grow a beanstalk.
Sure. I don't know how that works. Then what, would you crawl up the beanstalk to like a barbecue heaven?
Yeah, to get the golden egg, and then I could just buy all the barbecue in the world.
And a place in Seattle. That would probably solve that problem, too. One problem, one bird or whatever it is. One bird, a thousand stones. Something like that. It's something like that.
But yeah, no, I have been doing extensive research. Once you leave Seattle, it is very rare to get gigabit anywhere.
Really?
Except
see, I'm spoiled.
Seattle suburbs, which technically Redmond counts as.
You see, I'm spoiled because we have fiber to the door. After the flood in 97, they tore up they're like, well, we need to go relay new streets. And they're like, well, if we're going to do that, we should run fiber to every household in the entire city. So we have fiber everywhere.
There are spots in eastern Washington that have that for sure. And in Idaho, definitely.
Yeah.
But
eastern Washington is a sad, sad place.
We love you, Spokane, though. Spokane's not bad. Spokane's pretty great. Leavenworth is, I don't know if that's technically eastern Washington, though. It's on the other side of the passes, but Leavenworth is this Bavarian town. It's like you go back to Germany right before World War I, and I don't know, it's an interesting place, that's for sure. And then you have the Wild West, also known as, I'm blanking, but there's another town that's like a Wild West themed town. So we have a German themed town and a Wild West themed town just on the other sides of the passes. And then there's a whole lot of nothing. Sorry, you guys. And then almost before you get to Idaho, there's Spokane. And Spokane's pretty great. But I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know if it's much cheaper than Seattle. It must be slightly because everything is, but I don't know.
I feel like I just like the idea of living in a city, just leave my house and just walk down the street and find a new place every day.
Yeah, and those hookers are way more prevalent in cities.
It's funny you should mention that because when Chris and I were in New York, I brought that. I said the exact same thing. I was like, it wouldn't be for me permanently, but I could really see like renting an apartment in downtown New York or downtown Seattle or downtown LA and just – I walk out my front door onto this huge, like, gigantic city party kind of nonstop party thing, go find a restaurant that's open 24 hours a day, go see a movie that's open 24 hours a day, and then go back home. I could do that for, like, 8 months, 9 months, maybe a year.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I spent Friday night in Seattle. A family member of mine was getting married, and so Hadia and I went down a couple of hours early. We went to West Seattle, and we walked on along Alki Beach. And it's a beautiful part of Seattle because it's across the water a bit, so you can see the city, you can see all the buildings, and it's really a gorgeous view. But it's a little removed, so it's still downtown Seattle, but it's a little removed. It's on the west side of Seattle, towards the Sound, and
expensive side.
Yeah, it is expensive over there. And we were looking, looking around and going, I wouldn't want to live here necessarily, but I could totally Airbnb this thing for like a weekend, and that would be really a fun adventure. Is something where you could go down there and just walk around to different places, check out different stuff, and then just walk home. And I know that's one of the things that Wes loves about living down in Seattle. But I'll say this. It was also, at the same time, hectic as hell in rush hour. There's just so many things going on. So it's not particularly my speed long term either. But there is an appeal to it. So I go to this wedding, right, just as a quick aside. Pretty fun. The ceremony was 10 minutes long. They had everyone stand, except for like they had like three rows for like all the elderly folks in the family. But a wedding, when I was a kid, weddings would be 2-3 hours, and they would go on forever.
And you just switch right over to the reception and have fun for hours.
Yeah, that's what they did. So the 10-minute ceremony, and it was lighthearted and fun. And then they switched over, set down tables and chairs, and served some food, served cake. And then after the food and cake was served, they set up a bacon bar. A bacon bar, and they had your standard peppered bacon, they had your sweet and spicy bacon, they had a candied bacon. I mean, they had a whole, like, they had glass jars, large glass vases, really, that could fit a large potted plant, filled with bacon.
We're living in a true millennial world.
That's what people at the wedding were saying.
Nothing more than 10 minutes, bacon everywhere.
Yeah, it really was. It's the third wedding I've gone to this year, I think. Maybe the fourth, but I think it's the third wedding I've gone to this year. And
I thought you hated weddings.
I'm not a big fan. I'm really not a big fan, actually.
But if it's 10 minutes in a bacon bar...
It is getting better. They're getting more tolerable.
Or if it's crazy drunk Russians.
This is the thing, is they're becoming more enjoyable in a sense, because I get to see people I haven't seen in a while, but also I can do 10 minutes and then free booze and food. Like, that's something I can do. And it gives me an excuse to go down to Seattle.
So how many more weddings do you think you're going to go to before they're serving you avocado toast?
Probably the next one. But I'm putting the kibosh on for a while. I keep saying that. I keep saying no more weddings, but then, like...
They get better?
Family members that I've grown up with are getting married, and, like, in my age group. They're, like, the family members that I'm going to be around, like, in my 60s and 70s, right? Yeah. So
you got to play nice with them
now. I got to get in, right?
So they'll be friends with you later.
I'm in on the ground floor with the relationship right now, so it feels like that's an investment for the future when I'm an old, deplorable, despicable, grumpy old man.
Are you going to be, like, an old man pervert?
Well, I don't know about a pervert, but I'm probably going to be a horrible grump, I would imagine.
I want to share a weird fact that I was just thinking about as we're talking about this. I have been invited to, I think, maybe three weddings in my entire adult life. But I probably go to at least one funeral a year.
Wow.
And I'm just thinking about that. At 30 years old, how do I know so many people that have died? And why does nobody want to invite me to their wedding?
Probably because you are living in a cold, cold wasteland.
Don't you get enough fixes, though, with weddings? I mean, you're doing the production side
right,
of it with Altaspeed.
Right, and the funny thing is like, you learn some things, like, you... Doing it, you start to pick up things. Like, you know that outdoor weddings are 100% a bad idea because it almost something always goes wrong, even if it doesn't rain, because that's what everyone thinks of. Nobody ever thinks of wind. Nobody ever thinks of if it's cloudy out and it looks gloomy and then all the – I've seen a billion things go wrong. And the other thing is never, ever, 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 never have a carpet that goes from the front door of the church all the way up to the podium or whatever, it never is straight it bunches or it's never rolled out straight, and then all the pictures look weird. Like, it just I do get my fill that way, but it's just how have I not been invited to more? Like, why does nobody ever want me to come see them get married?
Here's a question, Noah. So have you also noticed that weddings are getting better, or is this just a Chris-centric thing?
Yeah, is this just my family, or is this a trend you're noticing where the ceremonies are getting nice and tight and they're not going on and on and on and on and on? They can do some vows, they do some kissing, they do some ring exchanges, you're done.
Depends on if it's Catholic or not.
Oh, for sure, yeah. My family is Catholic. That's the funny thing about it.
Yeah, see,
the younger ones are more, I think, probably skew a little more towards the agnostic spectrum. But the olders in the family are heavily Catholic.
They're hedging their bets.
I'm probably going to get in a lot of trouble for saying this, but like the fact that the older ones are Catholic and the younger ones are agnostic, that may not be a coincidence. And I'm gonna get in some trouble for saying that, but like when you go to some of these weddings, like I'm really terrible sometimes where I start to – if I get upset – I mean, you've both been around me, so I think you guys can see this. If I start to get upset, once I start to get frustrated, I start to lose control of what comes out of my mouth. And so, like, you know, if I'm at a Catholic wedding and, you know, I've been there for, like, you know, sometimes 2 hours. I've been sitting in this place, you know, and then – and I'll start to make, like, you know, offhanded comments. Like, I'd be like, well, nobody gave me the directions on when to stand up and when to sit down, and nobody gave me things on exactly what to say, and, like, what are we supposed to say now? And I'll, you know, because it starts to get under my nerves. Yeah, Catholic weddings take forever.
I don't want to be this guy, but, you know, Hadi and I are engaged, and we got the question 25 times last night, you know, conservatively. So when is your guys' wedding? Because, so the last two weddings we've gone to, we all announced our engagement at the same time. We all at that family's Thanksgiving, we all announced to the family that we were engaged. Like three of us, like, we have an announcement. And the next couple's like, we also have an announcement. And then the next couple, which is us, like, we also have an announcement. And so the other two couples now have gotten married. And Hadia and I are in no rush. First of all, this is not our first marriage, it's theirs. So it's like, okay, we've been through this before. It's not quite as exciting the second time. But the other thing is, like, what we're more, at least me and mostly her, are more focused on is the road trip after the wedding, which means we have to clear a huge swath of time. And until that happens, there's no wedding.
Right? I thought you were going to say tax benefits, because that's what I would be looking at.
Oh, well, no. Like, that's what's holding up the wedding, is like, I want to have one of my best road trips of my life for my honeymoon, and I'm just waiting for the decks to clear for that to happen, and it just hasn't happened because, you know, reality. And so, but family was asking and asking and asking, and, you know, I can't help but feel like the longer ceremonies are more narcissistic. Like, it's this whole, like, look at me, and it's my big day, and it's all this, it's all, like, clap when the bride enters the room, and I understand everybody needs to have a holiday, and everybody needs their big day, but I can't help but feel like it's part of this. Everybody gets a trophy culture. Everybody's supposed to get their big wedding. Everybody's supposed to have their beautiful day, and family's supposed to be there. You know, I couldn't give two shits. I don't know what's wrong with me. Maybe I'm some sort of psychopath, but as far as I fucking care, I could just go sign some legal documents, get all the legal stuff figured out, and then just go have a big party. Have a big party and then hit the road for like a month. And I mean, I'm good. That's all I need.
I mean, some people do that, yeah.
We have done weddings like that. We have done weddings where the actual quote unquote ceremony is nothing more than the witness and they sign the thing or whatever, and then the rest of the thing. Yeah. It's typically the country style ones where they're out in the middle of nowhere, and it's literally just an excuse to get extremely drunk. Sure. And party to loud music all hours of the night. Yeah, that is definitely a thing.
I feel like big weddings, and I don't mean to paint a brush to all of them, because I've been to some recently great weddings, like that Russian one I went to recently.
Yeah.
That was a huge wedding, but shit, if that wasn't a great time.
And this recent one, you had bacon.
Yeah, I mean, so my most recent weddings have been some of the best weddings I've ever gone to, so I haven't really gotten the vibe off these, but I've definitely been to some weddings where it feels like the whole birthday narcissism turned up to 11.
Well, I mean, that might call back to, like, remember, like, episodes and episodes ago, we talked about how once you become an adult, your birthday's kind of taper off.
Yeah, that's what I was.
So maybe
gives me that feeling.
Just like their one big birthday, since they're not getting any other ones anymore.
You know, looking back at it, and this might be the filter of divorce coming through here, but you look back at it and you go, man, you are in your early 20s. You have no fucking idea what life was going to throw at you for the next decade. And to think that you are smart enough to have the next 60 years figured out, the next 50 years figured out with this person. Like, it just feels like, it almost like, well, no wonder there's such a high divorce rate. People are constantly changing. And it reminds me of this question that came into the show. And the question was, should marriages in the United States have to be renewed every 5 years? And if you don't renew the marriage, it's sort of like a consensual, friendly divorce. And there would probably be some prenup elements that would be integrated in there. And honestly, I kind of think it's a good idea.
I mean, they do call it a marriage license, and you have to renew your licenses.
Yeah, I kind of think it is a good idea, because it gives you a five-year mandatory reflection point. Now, I'm not saying punt all your issues until your five-year mark, but at the same time, it's like, is this working?
Honestly, the main reason that doesn't happen is because probably religions get involved.
I have an older cousin, and she and her husband actually instituted a two-year sort of renewal, and it's not formal. It's every 2 years they go out on a date and they talk about what's working in the relationship and what's not working in the relationship, and who's satisfied and who's not satisfied, and what they're unsatisfied or satisfied about. And this question that came into the show was essentially, should the U.S. just make it law every 5 years marriages should be renewed? And I'm kind of going to go down on the side of yes.
See, in my mind, like, even that is kind of crazy. To me, if you're going to be in a relationship, you should be communicating about this stuff every day.
100%. 100%. Yeah. And
not going on a date and checking up every 2 years.
There's definitely relationships that would wait to that 5 year mark too and then just fall apart.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would absolutely happen. But that is happening already. That shit's already, like,
if you're
a couple that's going to have bad communication, you're already going to have bad communication. I predict that you maybe are not on the side of renewal. But I'm curious to see what you think. Like, if there was, how would you feel if the U.S. instituted a mandatory 5-year renewal for marriage.
You know my feeling. You know what I'm going to say, right? I don't think the government has any business telling you who – I don't understand why I need permission from the government to get married. If I want to get married, I should just be able to say, here's my wife, and we decided that we're married. I shouldn't need a license at all. I shouldn't need the approval of government. I should just be able to decide.
I completely 100% agree that's how it should be, but they're already involved. It's already a legal contract. There's already tax implications.
Yeah, we need to get rid of all that.
There's all like these laws for medical, like all this stuff.
Yeah, marriage benefits.
Yeah, there's marriage benefits. That's why people that are not the same sex or people that are the same sex fought so hard to get those same benefits. There are genuine benefits the government gives you as a legal entity.
Right, but you should just be able – you should, when you file your taxes, you should just be able to check a box that says I'm cohabitating with another person. It could be – I don't care if it's man, woman, dog, woman, horse. I don't care. The point is that if you are cohabit – in fact, why does it even need to be sexual in nature? Why does it even – if I – let's say – that my marriage, God forbid, my marriage fell apart. And let's say, God forbid, that you and Hadiya split up and you and I are like, hey, you know what? You know, it'd be really cool if we just, if we bought a house and got together and just made a bunch of podcasts. And maybe we drag Rakai and his girlfriend along
with us.
Maybe
we should think about this.
Well, I'm just saying. Kind of cool, okay, actually. so we buy this 5,000 square foot house, 6,000 square foot house.
I'll make sure to let Hadiya know that she's out.
Yeah, and we all move in. Well, I did it to set up the point that Chris and I, to the best of my knowledge, are not sexually attracted to each other. But,
oh, you
but,
liar.
But yet, then you started rubbing me in and it got a little bit sexy now.
Yeah, right. Sure. There's no way to avoid that.
My point is that our social footprint is the exact same amount reduced as it would be if we were romantically involved, right? Like, it doesn't matter. It still means that we're buying groceries and cooking and heating a house for two and all that stuff. Like, it shouldn't matter if why does it matter what the feelings involved are in how your taxes are filed? It's silly. Like, you should be able to check a box. I'm cohabitating with this person with this social security number, so we each want a tax break, and you should get it.
The only thing that gives me the heebie-jeebies about that is think about all of the things that would then be going by what the IRS says your status is. Like the hospitals, lawyers, all these things that take your marriage into account would all now be looking to the IRS to tell them yay or nay about your status.
But I think, like, as far as it should all be done individually. Like, so in hospital, you should just be able to designate a, you know, a companion or whatever. Right. And
that's not how it would go down, but I agree that's how it should go down. But now, okay, but so now taking into the reality, to take our current reality, where you do have to go to the courthouse in the States, you have to sign some documents, it has to get processed, all these things have to happen, should there be a renewal period? Now that we're
because here's the problem. There's, for the most part, people know if they're married or not. Like, I mean, if I ran into a bunch of people that they're like, yeah, you know, I'm technically still married to my ex because it's such a pain to get a divorce. So, like, you know, it's a real pain. If I ran into a bunch of people that were running around that were legally married, but that doesn't happen. Like, it seems to be easy enough. I actually helped a friend file for divorce. It actually really was pretty straightforward because they didn't have kids. Well, here's the thing. It's funny. So anyone that doesn't know anything about divorce, it's super easy if you don't have kids. Once you have kids, it's a whole different ballgame. Like, there's a whole stack of forms that are like, you don't need
that disclaimer on anything in life.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Changing jobs, traveling, moving.
You know, I feel like we know completely different groups of people, because I know a whole lot of people that feel like they are trapped in marriages that they don't want to be in.
Yeah, really? I know a few. Yeah, and specifically people that have businesses. Yeah. I know that can be a big challenge, and I have heard that. Yeah, in fact, yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I can think of several people I know. Actually, I just thought of another person. Yeah. Oh, that's sad. Now that I think about it. You know, divorce is a real hot button topic. That's why. So this is why I was. Let me explain a little bit. Having gone through a divorce, one of the things I was the most unprepared for was the social shaming and judgment from friends and family and assumptions that people made. I was shocked by it. Actually, I didn't expect like the most common response to a divorce that Angela and I mutually agreed to. It wasn't like one of us was like, that's it, I'm getting a fucking divorce and I'm out of here. It's like we lived in the same house. We decided we're going to get a divorce. And when the divorce went through, I moved out.
Mm-hmm.
And we still work together today. She was just here when we started the show, actually. And people just can't process that. And so they assume they treat it like a death. I'm so sorry to hear about your divorce. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to hear what happened. Oh, I mean, and we got hundreds of comments from the audience like that. I got it from my family. And funny, I was at that wedding last night, and I was told about a story where my uncle called my mom, and it was, okay, So do we hate Angela? And what do we think of Hadiya? Do we hate Hadiya or do we like her? and they were all trying to figure it out. And Noah was there with me when some of this was going down because we were in Denver. And I heard some of the backstory last night. The family's all, okay, so what's going on? Do we exclude her from family events now? And all these, like, instead of just being chill and just letting us, you know, just sit back and just watch what happens and just follow our lead, I guess. And so divorce, it came with all of these sort of like stinky, sticky social assumptions that were really awful.
Yeah, stigma.
And I feel like if we integrated it into our culture and just acknowledged half of these things fail, half of these things are just total train wrecks. So maybe, and the renewal process could be something, it could be really simple. It doesn't have to be like, it could just be like.
Yeah, if you don't come in and renew, your marriage is off.
Or if you don't come in and unrenew, you just auto-renews.
Here's the thing. Can we do two things? Can it be online and either very minimal cost or no cost to renew?
Yeah.
Can I set it up on auto-renewal? Because I hate trying to remember stuff like that.
I think
like,
these are all things that are totally doable.
Yeah, I think that if you don't set it to like auto-renew, though, it should like time out. Because then you have situations where like there's people that are trapped in marriages that see the problem with not having it like opt out is like I guess you would have to also set up like things like who gets the kids
and
all that.
That would all have to be maybe that's why I think going into it. So this was a question that came in, so it wasn't like we didn't fill in like a lot of the back details, but after I read the question, I thought, well, you'd almost have to have like some sort of prenup-ish, like a mini prenup that says in the event of kids or in the event of some sort of significant financial gain or something like that, this is how we divvy it up.
Do you know what's interesting? Marriage is the only legally binding contract that we enter to as adults without any terms set forth in writing. And we just accepted carte blanche. Like, you know, and the thing is, like, and this is coming from somebody who is, you know, very happily married. And I don't have any, you know, complaints or anything. But even I have to admit, like, it's kind of a scary thing if you think about it from a legal standpoint that you are entering into a legally binding contract for the rest of your life. And there are no terms set forth, expectations, term, none of that.
And a prenup is considered like a mood killer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's, oh, you don't love me then.
But that's the reason why they exist, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, I don't really remember how we got on this topic, but there's a question that came in. So if you want to send your question to the show, hashtag AskAir, there's a couple of ways you can submit to them to the show. Tweet them, just tweet at any of us, or just use a whole new 128 characters and do hashtag AskAir, and we'll look for it. Also, probably a more convenient way, if you're not on Twitter but you are in our Discord chat, you can do the hashtag AskAir in the Discord chat, and we'll search for that before each show, and we'll try to answer some of your questions. There's a new self-driving car that's been testing on the streets of Las Vegas. Not on the strip, but down on the streets, and it's only about a 20-minute loop that it drives, and it fits 4 or 5 passengers, and it's mostly a PR stunt. And it got into a bit of an accident 2 hours after it went on the road. Now, nice. It's not technically the self-driving vehicle's fault, but I kind of think it is. But the way the company's spinning it is they're spinning it as a delivery driver fault. So the delivery driver's coming in, and he's backing up to deliver packages, and he and the self-driving car is coming down the street. It spots a delivery truck, and at the time that the car spots a delivery truck, it's parked. It's not moving. And so the car stops at a nice safe distance, the self-driving car. It stops itself to give room for the delivery truck driver. But the developers never expected this scenario where it would start backing up towards them on a street where they're going forward. And so when the delivery truck started backing up to reposition itself to unload its payload, and the driver didn't see the car, because it's a small, tiny little car, it very slowly, like at 5 miles per hour, the delivery truck driver just backed right up into the bumper and just kind of like bent the bumper a little bit. But the bigger thing that it revealed here was because these human developers hadn't foreseen this particular scenario, the car didn't know what to do, and it just sat there and let itself get hit. While it was technically the truck driver's fault for hitting the car, if a human driver was in that seat, you would have popped it in reverse. Because you had like a solid, there was enough time where the reporter that was in the car got out of the car, walked between the truck and the car, stepped out of the way and took photos as the truck backed into the little car. So there was plenty of time for a human driver to pop it in reverse and back up 2 feet.
I find it incredibly interesting that the reporter taking photos of the car being backed into wasn't something that stopped the truck driver from backing into the car.
Yeah, he didn't see anything. He wasn't checking his mirrors, it sounds like. I think self-driving is going to be full of this. I think it's going to be more and more as you get off the highways and freeways. It is going to be 1,000 paper cuts because no singular drive is ever the same for me. Every day, something different happens. And yesterday, for example, we almost got sideswiped. And it was one of these situations where the driver just wasn't looking. They just started coming over very rapidly. And there was very limited options for me. And this is a drive I take, you know, I've driven to the studio tons of times now. And it's different. There's something different every single time. And you have to have a system that doesn't rely on the human developers conceiving of every possible eventuality. And as long as we're dependent on that, and we're dependent on accurate road mapping data, like one of the other things that scares the hell out of me is a lot of these driving models are based on LiDAR data that's collected years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they build these models based on data that's from years ago. They just recollected it, and roads change constantly. So you have these old models, I'm almost done, you have these old models, and then you have developers who can't possibly conceive of every eventuality, like which happened in this one. And it just seems like you're never going to get through all these edge cases. Until the thing can truly, legitimately think for itself, you're never going to get past this.
Yeah, I think that's why they're going into the whole NVIDIA-backed AI stuff.
Yeah, but dude, that shit is never going to get there. Like, not in our lifetime.
I don't know about that.
They have been working on voice recognition now for 35 years.
I think it is a lot harder to do voice recognition, especially considering how many different languages and stuff there are, too, than to do predictive algorithms based on things in physical space.
I don't know, man. Maybe. Yeah, I suppose if you had really great sensors and really, really fast computers, but an AI that can think about stuff and make a decision, like that AI would have had to observe where the photographer was at, the reporter. It would have had to observe what the truck was doing, what was going on behind it, and then make the best choice. And that's not impossible, but that sounds like extremely complex programming, and it sounds like something that a human being can do in nanoseconds. Or milliseconds, at least. It's like it was something we're fundamentally better at, in a way. What do you think, Noah? You think so? You think I'm wrong? Self-driving's going to get here before I realize?
No, I think you're 100% right. I also think you're 100% right in that everyone looks to self-driving cars as like, oh, the problem's going to be they're going to careen out of control and kill 5,000 people. And that's not where the problem with self-driving cars is going to be. It's like you said, it's going to be in a million different paper cuts. But here's, I think, really what I think is ultimately going to happen. I think insurance companies are going to be the mechanism that they use to enforce self-driving. So they'll just say, if you want to drive a car yourself, that's fine, but then you have to have the non-automated protection coverage, and that's $1,200 a month or whatever, right?
And I bet you it starts too, like with the same through insurance companies, it starts with use self-driving when you're on the freeway. And then when you get on the off-ramp, it's like cruise control, you turn off self-driving and now you're manually driving. And if you drive that way, you get a discount on your insurance.
And the thing is, I think that will happen until we get the majority of people in self-driving cars. And then these situations, they don't happen because computer will not make a mistake.
Right.
And
once
so
everything's self-driving, then it's perfect.
Yeah.
Then it's like data packets going down the wire.
That's the other upside of AI as well. You know, there's only a certain number of things that can go wrong, like in reality. And once you teach or once one car learns how to deal with that, the entire network knows.
Yeah, but what you're also saying with that is you're solving connectivity. You're solving the connectivity problem in a really big way, and in a way that scales massively to the cars on the road. But then you're also saying at the same time you're somehow solving the self-updating problem, which no vendor, except for Tesla, has even gotten close to getting right now.
Why do you think I'm rooting for Tesla?
Yeah.
There's another thing, though. I mean, there are certain, like, putting objects on a board and getting them from point A to point B, even if there are hundreds of thousands of them, even if they are moving incredibly fast, all of that can be accounted for. Here's what I think is going to be difficult to account for. I think it's going to be very difficult to account for the patch of ice that's on the road in North Dakota.
Yeah, or a tree that's down here in the Pacific Northwest happens all the time.
I mean, right. You say that, but it's also really difficult to account for that as a human being.
Yeah,
I'm not saying... Oh, no, okay, yes. The car is going to make a mistake far less often than human beings. That's a given. My point is that we're going to have far less accidents. I don't think anyone argues that. But the problems that can't be solved, I think, are going to be in the dynamic incidents. The axle breaks on a car and the car starts spinning out on the interstate. A computer is not going to know how to deal with that, and it's not necessarily going to have the input to be able to make the proper calculations quickly enough to deal with it.
Well, see, that's kind of where I disagree. Yeah, it might not initially have the idea of how to deal with that, but once it happens, you've got the data for that, and you can account for that in future iterations.
I do think there's a definite possibility once you get more things automated. That's why I think it's going to start on the freeways. It'll be delivery trucks for long hauls, and then it'll branch out into more rural areas. But you know what I have more optimism about short term? And I'll put a link to this in the show notes. Ford just published this. They're piloting a exoskeleton for their mechanical workers along the manufacturing line, and it gives them the ability to lift between like 15 and 20 additional pounds without any effort. So it's not like crazy powerful, but that also means it's really lightweight. So like they don't even really feel it on them, and it gives them back support. You got to check out the link in the show notes because there's a really cool picture of one of the workers who's he's underneath the car and he's doing work like riveting under the car. And they have, a real problem for their older workers who go home and their shoulders are jacked the F up from this work. And so in the trials here, they're trying this stuff out and they're saying that the pain is significantly reduced for some of these employees. And it's not AI necessarily. It's just the system that follows the human driver's movements, driver in this case, the manufacturing line worker, and it just supplements it where they need additional support. This is going to happen in a big way because there's a disabled sort of give movement back to people who can't move aspect to this for a certain type of customer. There's obvious military applications for this that are freaky as hell, and there's clear manufacturing benefits to something like this. So I think automation on the manufacturing scale and supplementing human abilities is definitely happening.
The problem is I think that's going to be a flash in the pan technology because they're going to replace that with robots anyway, because it's cheaper.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's probably going to be mostly robots and then you'll have augmented humans in the remaining places. You guys got to see this picture because this is a suit that they're testing out right now. And I also, a friend of the family works for people that have a neurological disease where they can't use their muscles very well, and they're building a suit for them too right now.
Well, I already told you back when Angela was on, I think within like 20 years we're going to have cyborgs.
Wow. And that is the point in which Noah and I are going to go build our cabin, and as two totally heterosexual guys, we'll co-occupy a cabin and make podcasts.
Now, is this 100%? Is this before or after Noah gets his Google eyes?
Oh, definitely after.
I don't know. I here's the thing. I'm all about technology as long as I can take it off. But Fargo, North Dakota was actually one of the first places in the U.S. that you could get an RFID chip implanted. And this is like, I'm talking 10, 15 years ago. They were working with this, and there was this lab that spun up, and it was a big controversy when they first opened. I had then and now zero interest.
Yeah, I hear you. Except for a robotic dick.